The USA is the home of serial killers. A killer is defined as serial when they have killed three or more people in various attacks. Of the prolific serial killers known around the world, 74% were born and raised in the USA.
Welcome back, everybody, to Murder with Mo, the true crime podcast that covers serial killer cases in the USA. I'm your host, Mo, and I'm on the case today. Trigger warning, today's episode does talk about harm to minors, so make sure that everybody listens with care. The sources for today's episode are LJWorld.com, TheLATimes.com, CrimeLibrary.com, ABCNews.com, NBCNews.com, and Oxygen.com. So acronyms are widely used, especially in English language, to help abbreviate words that may take too long for us to speak out. They're kind of like shortcuts. Acronyms can also be a fun way to nickname people by using their characteristics, features, or even their name. We've seen this with the likes of, TLC, with NASA, the FBI, and even in texting, while using OMG or LOL to abbreviate oh my goodness or laugh out loud. Now, all of these are lighthearted and fun ways in which acronyms are used. But there's a serial killer out there that's acronyms are known nationwide. He murdered at least 10 people in the state of Kansas by binding, torturing, and killing them. Our killer this week is going to be the BTK killer. BTK was a name that left the people of Wichita, Kansas in utter fear between 1974 and 1991. On January 15th, 1974, the Otero family's lives were completely changed. It wasn't until later in the day that 15-year-old Charlie Otero and his younger siblings, who were at school throughout the day, would even come to that realization. Sadly, the three of them found a horrific scene when they got home. Something I feel like would be anyone's, but especially a young child's worst nightmare to really see. On that day, Joseph Otero Sr., who was 38, Julia Maria Otero, who was 33, Joseph Joey Otero II, who was only 9, and Josephine Josie Otero, 11, were all brutally murdered. BTK entered into the Otero household earlier that morning when the young boy Joey opened the back door to take the dog out to use the bathroom. Holding the family at gunpoint, he ordered them to lay on the floor. He used a rope that he had already prepared to bind their hands and wrists together. Then, BTK took his time disturbingly murdering each of the members of the family. He suffocated both Joseph and Joey by placing plastic bags over their heads, then strangling Julia. Joseph at first had chewed through the plastic bag that BTK had placed on his head, allowing for him to breathe. So when BTK noticed this, he went back, doubled the amount of bags that was placed on his head to watch him suffocate slowly and die. To ensure that Joey would not be able to chew through the bag as well that was placed on his head, BTK actually put two bags and three shirts over his head to ensure that he could not breathe. He saved Josie for last. He led her down to the basement. Unfortunately, she was still bound at this time. He then hung her from the pipe in the ceiling of the basement. Next to where her partially clothed body was hanging, there were traces of ejaculation that were left next to her. Now imagine, this is the horrid scene that these poor young children had to witness when they got home from school that day. Like, that's literally, I can't even imagine. Finding their immediate family members left in these kinds of conditions, BTK struck soon after his attack on the Otero household. On April 4th, 1974, he broke into the home of a Wichita resident, 21-year-old Catherine Bright. He creeped in through her screen door when she wasn't home and took Catherine by complete surprise as she entered back into her own house. But to BTK's own surprise, Catherine actually wasn't alone. Her younger brother, 19-year-old Kevin Bright, was also present with her when she arrived home that day. Since he was again outnumbered, he resorted to holding the two of them at gunpoint in order to subdue them to his commands. He forced Kevin to tie his sister down and properly restrain her with the ropes that he provided. BTK attempted multiple times to strangle Catherine, but Catherine, you guys, was a fighter. She refused to go down without a fight. She struggled and did not want to succumb to the fate that BTK was trying to pin her with. Because of her will to live, BTK decided that strangling her was too much work, so he took a knife and repeatedly stabbed her in her lower back and abdomen, repeatedly stabbed her over and over again. He then turned to Kevin to murder him. He strangled Kevin, then finished him off by shooting him in the head. But unbeknownst to BTK, Kevin was actually still alive after being shot and was just playing dead in order to tell the story of the man who so violently attacked him and murdered his sister. So now 6 months have gone by without any murders, and we're now in October of 1974, and the media and the news outlets have been ramping and raving about the brutal murders at the Otero household and the Bright household. They were unable to identify who the killer even was, even when they had the live witness that survived the attack from BTK to say what he looked like. So the killer, wanting to take credit for his murderous ways, decided to leave a note in a public library book. The poorly written note gave authorities some idea of who they were dealing with, and a local newspaper began covering the story. BTK wrote, "It's hard to control myself. You probably call me a psychopath with sexual perversion hangup." He warned that he would strike again, noting, "The code words for me will be to bind them, torture them, and kill them, BTK. The initial stuck and the murderer came to be known by the variations of the BTK to the population." Now, after finding this note in the library book, the BTK killings took a break for about 3 years. During this time, the authorities were no closer to identifying who the BTK murderer was. And by this time, without a heavy police force trailing him, he decided it was time to come out of retirement and commit murder again. On March 17, 1977, Shirley Vian was resting at her home with her children when suddenly a strange man entered into the residence, pulled a gun out from under his jacket, and absolutely frightened the entire family. He grabbed her three children, restrained them together, and threw them into the bathroom. And while restraining them and throwing them into the bathroom, he threatened them to not come out or to make any noises or he will deal with them. This strange man then took Shirley, bound her legs and arms to the bedpost. He then decided to strangle her with the rope that he again brought after placing a plastic bag over her head. It's already bad enough. Anyways. After violently murdering their mother, the man leaves the children bound together in the bathroom. Now, the MO of this intrusion and murder fit that of the man that named himself to the police as the BTK. So looking for his next victim to stalk and murder, BTK took notice of Nancy Jo Fox going into her Wichita, Kansas home. On December 8, 1977, BTK made his move. He approached Nancy's house and knocked on her door a few times, but when no one answered the door, he knew that it was vacant, so he went around back, cut the phone lines, and then proceeded to enter into the house waiting for her in the kitchen. When Nancy walked into the kitchen, BTK made himself known. Now, the murder of Nancy Fox is one that BTK described as being the perfect kill. Nancy cooperated with him and didn't really fight back. She allowed him to have complete control over her and subdue her, which is actually really sad and scary when you think about it. You know, I'm not too sure what was going through her mind in her final moments, but she could have been thinking that cooperating was maybe her best bet in surviving, or that maybe trying to detach herself from the fate she couldn't avoid being met with was the best thing to do. Either way, it's heartbreaking what BTK was doing to her. He strangled her with his belt and left her body dead on her bed. After finishing his crime, on the same exact day, he went to a telephone booth and called the police to report that the body of Nancy Fox would be found in her house. He just loved to take credit for these murders, y'all. Shortly after the murder of Nancy Fox, toward the end of January 1978, BTK actually sent a poem to a local newspaper called the Wichita Eagle Beacon about the killing of Shirley Vian. And in less than 2 weeks from when the poem was sent on February 10th, 1978, a letter from BTK was sent to the KKTV claiming responsibility for the deaths of Vian and Fox, as well as another unnamed victim. It was very clear that BTK wanted the attention for the murders he was committing. In this letter, he demanded media attention, saying, "How many do I have to kill before I get a name in the paper or some national attention?" Like, he basically told them, like, make some noise, y'all. Like, he wanted to make it known that and clear in the eye of the public that he was the one methodically avoiding detection from police, that he was a smart criminal. It was also evident that he wanted to play a cat and mouse game with the authorities. He was getting a thrill from doing so. He asked for the police to send him a hidden message in response. And with the knowledge that BTK also watched the news, police decided to flash a subliminal message during one of the station's evening newscasts for a split second. Now, this message did state, "Now call the chief," and featured a drawing of an upside down pair of glasses, which were found at the Nancy Jo Fox crime scene. After another form of communication coming from BTK, the police chief Richard Lemunyan decided to announce to the public that there was a serial killer at large and to be wary as he was expected to strike again. It took you that long to tell the public that there's a serial killer at large? It was side-eyeing the police force with this. Now, after this cat and mouse game that BTK was playing with police, he went under the radar for almost a year. There were no murders or break-ins happening during this time that fit the MO of BTK until April of 1979, when the home of Anna Williams was broken into. BTK buried himself in wait at her house for hours, but grew impatient and left absolutely livid at the fact that he couldn't act on his urge to murder and that Anna Williams invaded his binding. He later sent her a letter making it known to her that he was actually in her house and that she barely escaped being one of his victims. Could you guys imagine that? That is sick. With still nothing to go on for an identity of BTK, later that year in August, the police released the audio recording they had of him calling them to report the murder of Nancy Fox in 1977. Now, this was in hopes that the public hearing his voice would be able to help find out who exactly this man is. That day, though, the police department got over 100 tips. All turned out to be dead ends, as they did not lead them to any closer finding the identity of BTK. So nearly 6 years passed now without a trace of BTK striking again, and all seemed calm and peaceful for the people in the Wichita, Kansas area. Could it be that their nightmare of the murderer that was terrorizing the city be over? You know, it was assumed that whoever BTK was either moved to another state or was incarcerated or could have any other life-changing situations happen that would have caused him to stop murdering. Unfortunately, the peace of not having a BTK-related murder would be coming to an end when Maureen Hedge, aged 53, was found on May 5th, 1985 at East 53rd Street North between North Webb Road and North Greenwich Road in Wichita. And a year later, on September 6th, 1986, BTK entered the residence of Vicki Lynn Wiegler by pretending to be a telephone repairman. Once inside, he strangled the 28-year-old to death with a nylon stocking in her house in Wichita. Afterwards, he rearranged her clothes post-mortem and took a number of photographs of her new body. Years later, 62-year-old Dolores Earlene D. Davis was found dead on February 1st, 1991 at West 117th Street North and North Meridian Street in Park City, Kansas. BTK had actually killed her on January 9th by strangling her with pantyhose. Now, Dolores' murder was a momentous one as she became the last known victim of BTK. Now, after the 1991 slaying of Dolores, it was as if BTK seemingly again dropped off the face of the earth. Once again, authorities assumed that he could have been incarcerated, died, or maybe even moved away. The investigation into BTK was deemed a cold case at this point. But it was reopened because in 2004, with many news stories marking the 30th anniversary of the Otero murders, BTK resurfaced. He didn't resurface by committing murders, at least, but rather to play another game of cat and mouse with the authorities. He remained quiet without as much of a hiccup for the last 13 years, but decided to break his silence due to the infatuation of wanting to play this wild goose chase with authorities. Like, this is crazy. He could have gotten away from it, but his ego would not let him. From 2004 to 2005, under several different aliases, he gave local media outlets and authorities several letters filled with items related to the BTK crimes. This included pictures of the deceased women's bodies, word puzzles, clues, and their personal belongings. He was clearly setting out to mess with the minds of authorities, taunting them because it would be the 30-year anniversary of his first committed crime. Now, this time around wouldn't be the same as the last cat and mouse game BTK and the authorities played together, as they were in the 21st century now, and there have been many, many, many advancements in technology, DNA, and forensic testing that were not available firsthand when BTK had started toying with them. So in early February of 2005, BTK made a dire mistake and was about to finally lose this game of cat and mouse. He sent a letter to police asking if he was to put his writings onto a disc and send it to them. Would the disc be traceable back to him? Now, what in the holy grail made this man think that the police that had been hunting him for 30 years would tell him the truth about if they would be able to track him or not? Like, sir, if they could track you by it, why would they tell you that they can? Anyways, for someone who thinks he's so smart, that was a pretty stupid move for him to make. So police, of course, decided to deceive BTK and answered his question in an ad in the newspaper, the Wichita Eagle, stating, "Rex, it'll be okay," making it known onto him that it would be safe to use the disc as they would not be able to trace a disc or any part of it back to him to find out his whereabouts. And this dummy actually believed the police and sent them a disc. On February 16th, 2005, BTK sent a purple 1.44 megabyte Memorex floppy disk to Fox affiliate KSAS-TV in Wichita. Police found metadata in a deleted Microsoft Word document that was still stored on the floppy disk. The metadata contained the words Christ Lutheran Church, and the document was marked as last modified by someone named Dennis. So, police did an internet search running the name of Dennis with the affiliates of the Christ Lutheran Church and found that the president of the church council was a man named Dennis Rader. When investigators drove by a Raider's house, they noticed a black Jeep Cherokee parked outside. Now, this was the same video that they saw on surveillance footage, leaving multiple locations that the various clues and puzzles were placed at. So now, this evidence was all still circumstantial. It wasn't hard enough to really convict him. So what they next did was find a different route to get him, and that different route actually involved his daughter. Unbeknownst to his daughter at the time, authorities were able to obtain a warrant to secure DNA from an exam that his daughter had done at an on-campus clinic at Kansas State University. DNA tests showed a familial match between Dennis's daughter and the sample from underneath one of the deceased victim's fingernails. So now, this indicated that the killer was closely related to Raider's daughter, and combined with the other evidence, you know, it's safe to say that this was enough for police to finally arrest Raider. On February 25th, 2005, while driving in close range to his home, police pulled Raider over and arrested him. When being detained, police asked him did he have any questions on why he was being taken into custody. And he responded saying he has a pretty good idea why. 3 days later, on February 28th, 2005, Raider was charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder, and his bail was set to $10 million, and he was appointed a public defender to represent him. Now, when the news broke to the public that the killer known as BTK was Dennis Raider, the community was utterly shocked. They could not believe this. His neighbors and fellow church members were stunned and really unable to come to terms with the news that the man that they knew was a serial killer that haunted them in this area for so long was Dennis Raider. Dennis Raider was known to them as a family man who was married with two children. You know, he focused on work and providing for his loved ones. He was a Boy Scout troop leader and a compliance supervisor for the Wichita suburb of Park City. He was educated. I mean, he graduated from Wichita State University with a degree in administration of justice. To top it off, he was the president of a church council, as previously mentioned. So who would ever think that he could do such a thing? All of this was just the perfect cover, though, for him to commit the murders in the area without anyone suspecting for it to be him, if you think about it. Now, Raider pleaded guilty to all of the charges on June 27th, 2005. As part of his plea deal, he gave the horrifying details of his crime in court. Many observers noted that he described the gruesome events without any sign of remorse or emotion. Now, because he did commit some of his crimes before the state's 1994 reinstatement of the death penalty, Raider, instead of getting the death penalty, was sent to El Dorado Correctional State Facility to serve 10 life sentences. He is currently 79 years old, and his earliest potential release date will be February 26, 2080, which is unrealistic because, you know, currently he is still incarcerated there in that facility in Boulder County, Kansas. And that today concludes the story of the serial killer known in the USA as BTK. Thank you guys for joining me today. Do not forget to like, comment, subscribe, and turn on those post notifications. I will see you next time for more Murder with Mo. I'm Mo, and I'm signing off the case today. Bye-bye.